Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
That's it. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. You know where you are. You know who you are. Lurking conservatives, how are you? Good morning to all of you people that are going to be a little upset today. Today is the 25th anniversary of the assassination, the killing, the murder of John Lennon out in front of the Dakota apartment building here in New York City. Good morning, Mark Riley. You were here in town when that happened. Or at least in the vicinity, I know.
Yeah, I was. Good morning.
Yeah, how are you? I'm sorry to bring it up so quickly. It's just been weighing on me.
I understand. It was, again, one of those days when New York City literally stopped. People walked slower. People's posture was lower. It was like... It was like a piece of the city had been killed.
You know, I was in high school, I guess, and before I get into this... I last night I went over and did the Greg Giraldo show, the Friday Nights with Greg Giraldo, which is on Comedy Central on Friday night. I taped it yesterday. We gave away some tickets, and you know who comes up to me after the show and goes, "Guess who I am?" Oh. And I said, "Who are you?" He goes, "Who's been the best listener since the beginning? Who's been with you since the beginning?" I'm like, "Omar." He's like, "That's right."
Oh my God.
And Omar gave me a big hug. And
Omar from Westchester.
He was there last night, and Mayor and Melanie and a few other fans were there. It's very interesting being on radio now for whatever I've been on for 20 months, just building the relationship that I have with some of these listeners who come up to me. There's absolutely no boundaries between us. Like, I walk off stage and some woman's like, "You okay? You're eating a lot of sugar. You're eating a lot of sugar. I'm a little worried about you." I'm like, "I'm all right, I guess. Yeah, I'm a little upset, but I'm like, and you're eating meat again. I mean, you shouldn't really be. I hope you're at least buying at Whole Foods."
Wait a minute,
and I'm
not like, that sausage thing.
Well, it was the turkey thing, but it was just concern, and I really have grown to appreciate, and I respect the fact that, you know, there is not much distance between your listener and me. If you listen to this show, you know me. I'm sparing you a few dark details of the festering nature of my unconscious or occasionally my conscious that percolate up into the atmosphere of my mind because I don't think it's appropriate. I mean, if we were on another show, if I was on another show, if we were doing the show that we do here on the breaks, then maybe I'd let you in on some of the dark festering sexual and weirdness that goes on in my head, anxieties and whatnot. But for the most part, you know me, and I honor that. And I think that type of intimacy is a unique thing. It's unique to radio, and it's certainly unique, I think, to people who have a certain distance from, I wouldn't call myself a big celebrity, but certainly to some people, I'm an important part of their life, and I don't know them per se. It was like that experience I had with Susan Sarandon on the phone when she was put on the phone by Tim Robbins. She's like, "Hey, Mark, what's going on?" Like, "We're buddies." I'm like, "Oh my God, I'm talking to Susan Sarandon." But, it was very nice to see all the people that came out. It was a fun show. Greg and I had fun. It was a little racy. Did some politics, did a little, marriage talk and this and that. They got to edit it down to like 5 minutes. Also want to thank, I'll tell you, I'm going to be a diabetic by the end of next week.
Why?
Because between that Godiva thing.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, Riley, this woman, Wendy, in Georgia, has sent 3 cookie trees. They're in the other office. We didn't show them to you because we know what happens to you. You're watching your weight number one.
I'm watching my weight number one, and I wouldn't need them if you laid them in front of me.
Yeah, and you wouldn't get an iPod. No.
When it comes to food, I'm getting to the point where I'm messing with my health, so I can't mess with food.
Really? Yeah. See, I'm getting concerned. I should go get checked because of the 2 gift baskets, and don't think I'm not appreciative of them. I love them, and I've eaten 2 cookies, and these aren't just cookies.
Oh,
Riley.
I saw them.
They're frisbee-sized cookies.
Yeah.
Here's a couple of the notes. She sent 3 different cookies. They're like bouquets. They're like cookies on stems. They're supposed to look like flowers. You have all been part of our families for almost 2 years. We may forget some of the shows, but never the feelings of joy and happiness that our families have while sharing our mornings with you, the Morning Sedition family. You're all great. Wendy, a blue old lady in Georgia. She's the one that sent me the Super Mark Maron teddy bear, too.
Oh, that too? Oh, okay.
At least I'm going to have things to fill my bed with when I get back to L.A. I'm going to have my teddy bear and maybe some cookies.
There you go.
I plowed through a half a pint of ice cream last night. That wasn't happy.
All right. Cookies?
Dude, it was so stupid. I get home from the Greg Giraldo show. I could go to bed, but I'm like, I deserve a reward. So I go out and I, you know, it's 8 o'clock, 8:30. I should be going to bed. I go out and buy like a pint of Chubby Hubby, which I don't even buy. And the only reason I bought it was because there was so much stuff in there that could give me diabetes and make me fat that I'm like, this is what I deserve. And I plowed through half of it. And then I went to bed with it gurgling my stomach. And I just laid there saying, I win. I win. All right. By myself. A Bob Hope moment from Wendy in Georgia. Thanks for the memories. Thanks for the new phrases and word meanings. You need to write a Morning Sedition dictionary. Thanks for the information and education. Above all, thanks for all the smiles, laughter, and even a few groans. You're welcome. So many turkeys, so little time, and all your future endeavors continue to knock the turkeys out of the sky with your words, wit, and wisdom. Wendy, a blue old lady in Georgia. Wendy, thank you so much for the cookies. We will all enjoy them, not just the Morning Sedition family, but there are enough cookies there for everyone.
For everyone on the floor, that's right.
Now, let's get back to why I'm tearing up about this John Lennon thing. Yesterday, and this happened to me about a half a year ago, too, when I watched a John Lennon documentary. You know, I came into the Beatles sort of secondhand because I was sort of awoken. I mean, I was 13 in 76, so I missed it for the most part as a teenager. But I had all the records. I bought them all, and I was a Beatles fanatic. But it's just very interesting to me how close I am in my heart for some reason to John Lennon, because I watched that documentary about a year ago, and I got teared up then. And then today I'm reading the papers, and I'm reading about him, and there's just something in me that it's very sad. There's something about when a guy like John Lennon, who is sort of reckoned with himself, who has come through everything that he's come through, and is very honest with his audience, and very honest in terms of how he feels about the world, and it's very plain, and it's sincere, and it's full of emotion, that you feel that connection to them. And when he died, I really think that on some level, a certain amount of hope was killed symbolically.
Well, see, I go back a little bit further. I was it was 42 years ago this month, mm-hmm. when I first heard somebody. I was like 12 years old, and somebody in my class said, "Have you heard about this group? They're coming from England." At that point, they had not released a song in the States yet.
Uh-huh.
And they said, "Have you heard about this group?" And they called them at that time the Silver Beatles.
Silver Beatles, yeah.
Yeah. They said, "This group is coming over from England, Silver Beatles. You got to hear their music. You got to hear their music." By 6 months after that, by mid-1964, yeah. the entire country was in the throes of something that I think they had really not experienced before. You know, Frank Sinatra was a very big deal to a lot of kids and teenagers during his time. But the Beatles were something completely different to a very huge generation. Remember, this was the baby boom generation that was coming into young adulthood at the same time this group came out.
Yeah.
I wasn't their biggest fan. I was a big fan of the Temptations and the Motown thing, mm-hmm. and a lot of the Stax stuff that came out during that time. And Phil Spector. I was also mm-hmm. a big Phil Spector fan.
Who worked with the Beatles later.
Yes, he, mm-hmm. he did work with the Beatles later. But by the time the Revolver album came out, which I think was 65, 66.
Yeah.
I was converted.
Mind blown.
Yeah, because it really did. And then, of course, Sgt. Pepper just set everybody completely back.
Those two records are mind blowing.
Yeah, and it really established Lennon and McCartney. I mean, you were probably just a toddler when they got on the radio somewhere and said they were bigger than God. And it created this huge, huge firestorm of criticism. But then people started saying, well, you know what? To some extent, they're probably right. And Lennon went on from there after the Beatles broke up and all the trauma and all the agony, which happened, by the way, at the same time the country was going through trauma and agony during that summer of 1968. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Beatles more or less broke up in 68. So people kind of, I think, associated those things together.
And they grew up with them.
They did.
This was a bunch of guys that people saw evolve, that people had very deep emotional relationships with, and you saw John Lennon evolve as a person. You saw him become an activist, speaking out against the war, being critical of organized religion in Imagine, which is a beautiful song, but
yeah.
also being a very spiritual person. And I think that people really had that connection. There are some people that believe there was a conspiracy to kill him, that Nixon was out to get him. Apparently, there's some FBI files that were unreleased to this day about his interaction with anti-war movement people in England. And there are some people that really believe that Mark David Chapman, who walked up to him 25 years ago today and put three bullets into his chest, and when he turned to walk or run away, he put two bullets into his back. He emptied the chamber, one bullet missed, that he was on some sort of Manchurian candidate-like assignment to assassinate John Lennon, which on some level would make sense. I don't want to necessarily go there this morning, but in terms of what he was as a symbol of hope and a symbol of resistance to what this country was going through during the Vietnam War and after, he was certainly one of the biggest ones in terms of music.
Well, because when you have someone who can make a very simple phrase, all we are saying is give peace a chance, and to put that on the lips of literally millions of Americans just by listening to this particular piece of music and making people, you know, the whole idea of war is over if you want it.
Wait. Absolutely. I'm sorry. I wasn't talking to you. I was responding. I'm a little too much sugar. Why don't we hear the Cosell one right now? This is how most of the world heard about John Lennon's death. Yeah, you know, Howard Cosell was told by his producers not to do that, and he decided to do it anyways because he thought it was his responsibility. If you want to reflect, you can call us, 866-303-2270. We'll be playing a little more of other people's reflections from in front of the Dakota and Strawberry Fields shortly after John Lennon's murder, after we take a little advertising break here. 17 past the hour. Good morning. It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition.
I'd like to live to ripe old age with Yoko only. And I'm not afraid of dying. I don't know how I'd feel at the moment, but I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Two past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. It's Mark Riley.
Hi.
We're listening to John Lennon. This is his solo career. Today is the 25th anniversary of the killing of John Lennon by Mark David Chapman in front of the Dakota apartment building here in New York City. A sad day. I got to be honest with you. I'm very sad. I don't get sad for a specific reason as much as I would like, actually. Usually it's just a general sadness. But me personally, I think at this point in my life, I listen more to Lennon's solo music than I do the Beatles.
Really?
Definitely. The first couple albums to the Imagine album and to the Plastic Ono Band. Those two albums blow me out. They're so raw. They're so real. Mother, Jealous Guy, Crippled Inside, God, Working Class Hero. Those are the stuff that really still resonates with me. And if I need a dose of Beatles, I'll throw on Revolver or Sgt. Pepper's usually. Maybe something a little earlier, but a lot of people are calling. A lot of people are reminiscing. I think it's a good day to do it. Why not? Here's some people from who were right outside of the Dakota apartments the day after Lennon was killed.
Why come here?
Why come here and stand by this?
Because I feel I owe that to him. It's nothing. I mean, I feel like I can't do anything else, and I can't sleep. That's for sure. It makes me sick.
I just came because he's part of my life, and I just wanted to just see what happened, and part of my life just kind of died when he died.
It's a matter of reverence, I guess. You notice the crowd. No one is making a lot of noise. Everybody here is kind of like look at them. They're all, everyone here was 15 and 16 and just about ready to explode when all of a sudden the Beatles came along and said a lot of things that that everybody wanted to say. And all of a sudden we find out we've grown up. We're really big people now, and the people that we thought were great are dying.
Well, the next thing I know, Howard Costello told me John Lennon was dead. I was kind of stunned. I never met the man, but I grew up with his music in him, and I feel like he's a brother.
I'm here because out of respect and admiration and love for someone who died, who was very close to me, and I think close to most people of my generation.
I don't know why I'm here, and I don't know why he was shot, and I don't know why most of things happen the way they do. I just was upset, and I wanted to be here.
Yeah, you know, this guy had such a close connection. It's weird. It's the same in some respects with someone's music. If it's that rawly emotional as Lennon was, and as powerful as the Beatles were throughout their career, that people just develop this incredibly personal relationship. We've got a bunch of calls here, Riley. Should we take a couple before we get into a rock? We're going to talk a little bit about Bush's speech. We're going to get Borzu Daragahi on the phone from Iraq to try to validate some of these points that Bush seems to think that everything's going peachy aside from a couple of minor problems there, and we'll get some validation or some not validation from Borzu in a second. Let's talk to Marcus in Ohio. Good morning, Marcus. How are you feeling on this day?
Hey, Marcus.
Good morning. Good morning, Mark. And Mark, how y'all doing today?
Good, right. Good.
I was telling your screener that the night that John Lennon was murdered, we was at a concert for Stevie Wonder and the Cow Palace in San Francisco, and it was very, 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 turned into a very sad occasion. Needless to say, we was all hurt. You know, Stevie Wonder was particularly affected. You know, it was really difficult. And the great Carlos Santana was in the audience, and he walked up onto the stage, unrehearsed, and got to jamming and help save Stevie Wonder's concert.
That's a deep story, Marcus. I had never heard that before. At the Cow Palace, huh?
Right, Cow Palace in San Francisco.
Wow, that's quite a memory. Thanks for sharing that,
Thanks,
Marcus.
Thanks, Marcus. Much appreciated. Wow.
Could you imagine that? Like, Stevie Wonder gets the news. He's still on stage. The show must go on. He's broken up. He, you know, he's having a hard time rising above his emotions, and Carlos comes out and
just says, okay, man.
Let me lift you up, brother.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, I always wanted to live in the Dakota because it was just that big, gigantic, awesome. For those of you who've never been to New York, it's a big, gigantic, awesome. To this day, I can't walk past the Dakota without thinking about John Lennon.
Oh, it's
hard.
You're literally walking right over where he was laying on the ground. Look, I guess we'll take some more calls a little later in the show. We'll talk about this some more. I think we should get into calling the president on some hypocrisy. I think that's important, too. I think John would like us to have done that.
Yeah.
I somehow feel that we are honoring something that he stood for by doing this show for the last week that we are going to be doing it here. We will be talking to Borzu in Iraq, and we will be talking about the president's speech in just a minute. 27 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Now, another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Why do you sound a little somber? Am I mistaken?
Yeah.
Why are you so somber?
Yeah, I heard about Randy Rhoads. Now, she was shrill and annoying and a tool of the socialist left, but I knew you were close. And I'm sorry for your loss, Mark.
Wait, what are you talking about, man?
I know this is a hard time for you, but the Lord works in mysterious ways. His wonders to behold.
Wait, back up. Lawton. Randy had surgery. She's at home. She's on medication. She's having the best time possible recovering from surgery.
She went home, but it was to her heavenly home.
Whoa. No,
she left the cares, worries of this world behind her. Now she's got her own room above God's garage.
No, stop it. Lawton, Randy is fine. Okay, where'd you hear about this, buddy?
Mark, I read her obituary on Talon News.
Okay.
So there is no possibility of a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what happened. It said Randy was walking in Central Park. and one of Christo's orange gates fell and crushed her skull.
No, no.
I knew those things were a disaster waiting to happen. She was killed by art.
What do you...
Poor Randy. Poor,
you know what?
Randy.
I get it, Lon. I get it.
Poor thing.
You listen,
killed by art.
You listen to her every day, don't you, Lon? Oh, no.
It's the best 4 hours of my life.
Oh, no.
I love Bellinger movies. I'm doing it at home.
Okay.
I'm so scared for her. Did she get my flowers?
I don't know. I'll ask her. I'll ask her.
Where's your flowers?
Take it easy, man. Please. She's going to be okay, all right? She's probably listening right now, okay?
Really?
Yes.
You think she's listening?
Yeah, I think she might be.
I say, Randy, you're a fine girl.
Oh, boy.
What a good wife would be.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
36 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. That, of course, a classic bit of Lawton Smalls. Look, in a speech hosted by the Council on Foreign Relations, Bush, President Bush, addressed what he framed as progress in Iraq. He used Mosul and Najaf as examples of progress in wartime Iraq. Bottom line, to me, just the fact that in Bush's speech at this point in time, almost 3 years after the unnecessary invasion began, he said, quote, sustaining electrical power remains a major challenge, end quote. I mean, if this is the best he could come up with as a first-class BS artist that he is, Iraq must be a disaster. And as far as tooting the horn about what was going on there, he talked about the projects that are building schools, the training of teachers, the distribution of textbooks. He spoke about the new currency, the reopening of the Iraq Stock Exchange. He talked about extending lines of credit to Iraqi business people. But the bottom line, there's so many mixed messages, and there was more negativity than usual in his speech outside of the fact that he threw a bone at Joe Lieberman, who must be just dancing around peeing himself right now, and we'll get into that in a minute.
Oh, yeah.
But let's talk to our guy in Iraq. You know, in a speech, Bush specifically claimed, quote, the entrepreneurial spirit is strong in Iraq. Our policies are aimed at unleashing the creativity of the Iraqi people. But is it really the case? Our next guest can shed light on the Iraqis' perspective. Borzu Dargahi is a staff writer for the L.A. Times. He joins us this morning on the phone from Baghdad. Good morning, Borzu. Are you seeing much of that entrepreneurial spirit on the ground in Baghdad that Bush referred to?
Hey, Borzu.
Hey, how you guys doing? I don't know. Let me just tell you that, you know, I travel around the Middle East quite a bit. You know, I go to Amman, I go to Dubai, I go to, I've been to Abu Dhabi just recently. I've been to Muscat, even Tehran. And every Middle Eastern city you go to, you see these huge construction cranes up. There's just a massive building boom. There's an oil boom going on. You know, the price of oil is up above $60 a barrel, and all of the Middle Eastern cities are, you know, they're just soaked in money. Building subways, building skyscrapers, you know, and just unbelievable wealth. And in Baghdad, you see none of that. You see none of that. So if you compare Iraq to the region economically, you don't see a lot of investment. On the contrary, what I see, getting on the plane, coming in and out, and talking to Iraqis in other countries in the region, is a lot of rich Iraqi people getting out of the country and taking their money with them.
Borzu, a couple of things, a two-part question. One, we've got reports this morning that there's been a bus that blew up in Baghdad, killed something on the order of 30 people, wounded another 37. And is the president being totally honest with the American people when he targets two cities in Iraq and ignores or mentions very little about what's going on in Baghdad?
I think that, you know, the president has gotten very careful about what he says recently, and nothing he says is completely inaccurate or false or anything even close to that. But it's just not telling the whole picture. Yes, things in Najaf have improved since a year ago when there was, when the city was emerging from fighting in the streets. But they're actually probably quite a bit worse than 2 years ago. You know, same thing with Mosul. You know, things are better in Mosul than they were a year ago when there was a insurgency and the whole police force completely collapsed. You know, but they're probably a lot worse than they were two years ago, right after the invasion, when Mosul was a bastion of prosperity and stability.
Is it fair to say that when President Bush blamed Saddam Hussein in the quote last night when he said rebuilding a nation devastated by a dictator is a large undertaking, that he's diminishing some of the responsibility for destroying that country that the U.S. troops had on there?
No, I think that's true. And also the sanctions. The sanctions had a big effect on Iraq, you know. And if you compare Iraq now to, 1996, it's maybe a little bit better. But if you compare Iraq to, 1989, 1990, 1991, before the war started, the first Gulf War, before the sanctions were imposed, it's still way below that level. It's still way below what Iraqis expect and the kind of the standards of life that they were used to for decades.
Borzu, you mentioned earlier, and it's very interesting you say this, that most of the other states in the Middle East that are reaping windfall oil profits are in the midst of these big booms. Where is Iraq's windfall oil profit money going?
Well, you know, for one thing, Iraq has a huge bloated state government. The public bureaucracy is huge. And because of the nature of the economy and the nature of the insurgency and the violence and trying to keep the discontent down, no moves have been made to tear down that bureaucracy. In fact, you know, one of the sort of double-edged pieces of good news out of Iraq, public employee salaries have been, you know, very much steadily increasing, you know. So these people, you know, working at the ministries and the public sector have more money in their pockets, at a cost of basically running Iraq into the ground to some extent. Also, the oil industry is not producing as much oil as it could be. They're producing maybe, 2 million barrels of oil a day, which is nothing compared to the 6 million barrels that most oil experts say that Iraq is capable of.
Borzu, is there any chance that some Iraqis are going to be writing in Saddam's name as a candidate for the presidency this weekend?
I think that there probably will be some small number of people who will do that. Very small, maybe a few of his tribal relatives in the Tikrit area. But you know, most people to some extent are just over Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, Borzu Dargahi, thank you for giving us the information. Appreciate it. Be careful.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, guys.
All right, okay. Thanks, Borzu.
It's interesting, Riley, because you know President Bush did mention Joe Lieberman. He quoted Joe Lieberman. Joe Lieberman is probably running around his office, elated, yelling, "He likes me! He likes me!" I mean, after Bush made reference to him in his speech yesterday, he talked about Lieberman's four trips to Iraq and quoted Lieberman in an attempt to appropriate what he was trying to push off as Democratic support for the war. I just want to say thank you, George Bush, for baptizing Joe Lieberman. Now you can have him.
You know, since when did he become Donald Rumsfeld?
Unbelievable. And it's interesting because the assessments that Lieberman was making in the quote from George Bush's speech, he said, Senator Lieberman goes on, quote, "Does America have a good plan for doing this, a strategy for victory in Iraq? Yes, we do. And it's important to make clear to the American people that the plan has not remained stubbornly still, but has changed over the years." And he talks about, Bush talks about Lieberman's support of this. And then we talked to Mick Ware, who we talked to right after Lieberman came back from Time magazine, who had this to say specifically about Joe Lieberman.
I and some other journalists had lunch with Senator Joe Lieberman the other day, and we listened to him talking about Iraq. Either Senator Lieberman is so divorced from reality that he's completely lost the plot, or he knows he's spinning a line. Because one of my colleagues turned to me in the middle of this lunch and said, he's not talking about any country I've ever been to. And yet he was talking about Iraq, the very country where we were sitting.
He was spinning the line that got him the approval of the president yesterday, which I think is very important to Joe Lieberman, one of the foremost centricrats in the Senate. Let's just run some numbers by you about Iraq. The number of U.S. soldiers in Iraq, 158,000. Number of U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq, 2,130. Number of U.S. soldiers wounded in Iraq, 15,568. Which is mind-blowing. The number of Iraqis killed from the start of the war to the present, somewhere between 27,115 and 30,559. The estimated cost of the war as of October 2005 is $251 billion. That's an estimate of about $195 million a day. the total cost of the Vietnam War to U.S. The cost of the Vietnam War to U.S. in current dollars would be $600 billion. So we're approaching that.
We're approaching that. But you know, this Joe Lieberman thing's very interesting to me because it presents the Democrats with a very interesting quandary.
Mm-hmm.
Why not make an example out of him?
Right.
You know, why not run somebody against him? There's a possibility of former Connecticut Governor Lowell Weicker, who had that seat before Lieberman beat him in 88, may run again. And if he didn't, I'll tell you who ought to run against Joe Lieberman.
Who?
Because I'm a son of Connecticut. I was raised there.
Mark Riley's running against
not
Joe.
Not me.
Oh.
Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro from New Haven, where we have an affiliate, WAVZ. Rosa DeLauro would make a very interesting challenger to the newly minted Republican Joe Lieberman.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's a reach out. It's a suggestion. Let's see if it yields any results. I say, let the other side have them. That's what I say. Look, despite whatever lip service Bush has paid to economic growth or jobs created, the truth is most Americans are strapped. The holiday season's coming. What are you doing? There's a lot of things that are going to be changing for a lot of people in terms of their economic viability in the world we're living in. And I just wonder how people are handling that over Christmas. We'll talk a little bit about it, but if you've got some specific changes you're making, I'll solicit some calls now, 866-303-2270, of how you're handling your money coming this Christmas holiday. Are you strapped? Are you mad? Are you going to do things that are charitable? I'll ask for these calls again because I want to talk about this a little with Riley in a second. 46 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning's Edition.
This is Rob Corddry from The Daily Show, here to remind you that when top news reporters and investigative journalists like me want their news skewed so far to the left it's wearing a dress, we turn to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Celebrate the one-year anniversary of Air America Radio. We're pleased to present another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Yeah, as you know, Ramon has always infiltrated any top officials in the Republican Party. So here's today's palm pilot for our recently re-elected president, Abraham Lincoln. 6 a.m., wake up, trim beard. Note, does it make me look, gay? 8 a.m., free the slaves. Expect a temporary dip in the poll numbers. What's the worst they can do to me? 11 a.m., write speech for appearance in Gettysburg. Better angels of our nature, great task before us. Blah, 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 blah. CNN will run 20 seconds no matter what I say. 1 p.m., meet with generals. Find someone comfortable killing Southerners. Note, they can start with my wife. Hello? My wife. Is this on? 3 p.m., pose for the penny. Note, George Washington owns slaves, and he gets to be on the dollar. What's all that about? 8 p.m., see play at Ford's Theater. Tell Mary Todd I'm leaving at intermission no matter what. I need actors in my life like I need a hole in the head. A hole in the head. Where's my gun sound effect?
Another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
How did I think that was going to be funny at that moment? Wait, how would I take a perfectly good comedy bit and then make it so graphic? Why would I have to shoot Lincoln in the head? What was going through my mind? That was a lot of M&M. See that? That's the M&M defense. Wow. That was a funny show, though, that year anniversary thing we did with the traveling through time.
I just hope we don't all go straight to hell for it.
Oh, I haven't heard you say that in a while. I'm glad we're going to hell again. Look, as I said before, despite whatever lip service people might have gotten from the president the other day about the economy, about 300-some-odd thousand new jobs, about this and that, the bottom line number that always really bites me is households are now spending about 13.6% of their disposable income to service their outstanding debt. In the third quarter of 2005, all banks reported that the ratio of consumer loans that were in default, including credit card debt, rose over 3% for the first time in more than 2 years. So, you know, look, and 25 million people live in this country without health care. Many are pulling back on their holiday shopping plan. Some people are working two or three jobs just to break even, with gas prices being what they are, with heating oil costing what it's going to cost. Many families are planning on spending money on practical gifts. Some people are taking whatever extra money they have and stashing it for next year. I mean, are you doing anything different this season, Riley? I'm not necessarily you, but I tell you, I don't buy many presents. I'm one of these people. I like the go out to dinner, maybe try to spend some quality time and do something nice. I think I'm going to do something nice for some other people this year. I think I'm actually going to do something charitable.
Yeah, I think I'll probably do something along those lines too. I think that the American consciousness, maybe because of the extended period of time of the war in Iraq and some of the things that have gone on this year, like Katrina and those sorts of things, I think people are starting to turn inward that way and starting to understand. And, you know, if this is true, God bless America. But I think people are starting to understand that Christmas does not have to always be about going out and buying something.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, with things as expensive as they are and with people strapped for money a little more this year, it seems to me that there's an opportunity there to engage in what should be more of what is the Christmas spirit of helping other people, being a little more charitable. I used to know comics, a couple that used to go down on Christmas and Thanksgiving and volunteer at soup kitchens and get involved in that way. Mm-hmm. There's all these places that need volunteers. Apparently there's some mega churches that aren't even holding services on Christmas. Not because they're sending their people out to be charitable, but because they don't make the money that they usually make on regular masses because it's not a big turnout on Christmas. It's interesting. I want to talk about
it. It's not a big turnout on Christmas.
It's true. I mean, the Catholics come out.
That's hilarious.
The Catholics come out.
You can't get in church on Christmas.
But these mega churches are a different brand. It's a different brand of Christianity. It's not even evangelical. Some of the evangelicals are pissed off at the mega churches for not having Christmas mass because Christmas is on Sunday this year. It's a very interesting thing, and it's something that I think we should investigate a little more because we'll talk about the story a little later about why these new type of mega churches that have some of them up to 50,000 members are more concerned with building communities, building schools, building ideologically sound communities, based on their principles, but not so much in honoring the revelry of Jesus per se.
Well, no, they're not doing that. They've turned these places into, Christianized Walmarts, for God's sake. If Walmart's not open on Christmas, why should a megachurch be open on Christmas?
That's the building blocks of the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade. This is not about religion. That's when we were talking about Chris Hedges. It's about money and power. For a pastor to speak to a community, a congregation, and say, look, you guys don't have to come to church on Christmas. Maybe you should spend it with your family. That is really, in order to honor Jesus, if you're going to believe in that, you should be going to church every Sunday and on Christmas, certainly on Christmas. It's his birthday. So for a pastor to usurp that basic tenet of honoring the religion that you're supposed to be part of, that means he is taking more power than the religion itself. So it really becomes less about the religion and more about the power of that pastor and what he has in mind for that community.
Well, I don't understand. If you want to be with your family, why don't you take your family to church? I mean, it would seem logical.
Yeah. I want to encourage people to give us a call and let us know what your plans are for Christmas. Is the economy hurting you? We'll talk a little bit more about this. We're going to talk about John Lennon's death, about that air marshal shooting that guy, running off the plane. We'll talk a little bit about Saddam. We're going to be talking to Russ Feingold later in the show about Bush's speech. Big stuff ahead. 57 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Blah, blah, blah.
It's 6 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program, the last of six programs. I am very sad today. I'm feeling a little better than I did earlier. There's a couple things I want to get out before I start talking about the day. Thank you, Wendy, for the three, not one, but three cookie bouquets. That was very sweet of you. Thank you for the teddy bear from last week. I will remember you fondly, and I appreciate all the sugar. Thanks to two of my listeners, I'm going to be a diabetic by next Friday and weigh about 30 more pounds than I weigh now and probably have heart problems. But it's out of love, so I can understand that. Sometimes love hurts. Do you know what I'm saying, Riley? I'm going to try not to. I love cookies. Boy, they were good, too. Look, some interesting things are happening in the news. We'll get to talk a little bit about today being the anniversary of John Lennon's death, the 25th anniversary. We're getting a lot of interesting emails. I'm profoundly affected by it for things that are beyond my control, how much emotion I have around John Lennon. It's just mind-blowing to me. But first, let's get into some of this other stuff. An air marshal in Miami shot and killed a passenger claiming to have a bomb in his backpack, and then he ran from the plane. This is the first incident of an air marshal actually opening fire. I didn't even know they were there, Riley. I'd heard that they were there, but now everyone gets to play who's the air marshal. Apparently, the man was an American citizen from Florida. He had come from Ecuador and was boarding a plane to go to Orlando. He was mumbling about having a bomb in his bag. A couple of air marshals approached him. He got up. He ran down the aisle of the plane. His wife tried to run after him. He ran down the gateway. They told him to stop, and he reached into his bag. He went to reach into his bag, and they blew him away. There was no bomb. They blew up his bags on the tarmac. His wife says that he's bipolar. He hadn't taken his meds. But whatever the case, the marshals follow basically the same procedure as other law enforcement personnel when it comes to firing on a potentially dangerous person. I don't know if I can fault the air marshals in this with the information I have. I have to admit that I was a little happy to know that they were there. I feel horrible for this guy. It's hard to be mentally ill and unmedicated, and certainly when it gets you killed like that.
Well, yeah, and there is an investigation that's being conducted now by the Marshals Service. Mm-hmm. They announced that late yesterday. And it appears as though, for all intents and purposes, they followed the letter of what they were supposed to do under those circumstances. Unless, and this happens every now and then, unless the story that we have been given up until now
is wrong.
Different,
sure.
Or wrong, or
sure.
Incorrect, or being put out by people who are trying to escape some sort of blame for what
happened. Well, a lot of people saw it, and apparently the guy's wife had run off the plane right before it took off to take a phone call. There was a little chaos, but that happens around people who are mentally ill. It was interesting to me that it's a fairly high percentage of mentally ill people who get killed by police on a yearly basis because they don't have a context for reality sometimes. This guy was probably making a joke. He got stubborn. He got belligerent and just, you know, rant. You know, I know I've dealt with mania before in my family. And when you're manic, you're omnipotent, and you think that you can do anything. So this might have been something that was obviously not meant to go down like this, gone too far.
Absolutely.
Saddam Hussein left the courtroom shouting on Monday and refused to reappear yesterday. The judge went on without him and let him pout. The court has been adjourned until after the elections on December 21st. The witnesses that were scheduled to testify all testified, and the judge adjourned, saying he will address the concerns of the lawyers. Now, what was fascinating to me, obviously, outside of Saddam's performance, was such an amazing example of pathological megalomaniacal narcissism, where you have witness after witness talking about being tortured and family members being killed, and eventually Saddam just couldn't take it not being about him anymore, and he said, what about Saddam's torture? What about the treatment of me? That was very interesting to me, Riley, because to me that showed a guy that was clearly and not only guilty of being a dictator and killing hundreds and hundreds of people, but a guy that was sick in the head.
Well, I don't think he's copping an insanity plea. I'm not sure they have insanity pleas in Iraq's newly emerging court system.
I'm not being sympathetic necessarily, but he's clearly, I couldn't believe that.
Well, look, the man is trying to control to the extent he can the time he has left. I think Saddam believes he's going to die and he will be executed. And I think that he's just trying at this point to assert himself in the face of, you know, impending doom.
Well, I like the fact that he's president of Iraq. He calls himself president of Iraq. He refuses to see any legitimate government there other than his. So when they order him executed, is he going to go, no one orders Saddam executed. Saddam will order Saddam executed. Kill me now.
You know, I bet you they got a really heavy suicide watch on him. I guarantee you, if they do decide to put him on death row.
That's true.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, remember that the Iraqi appeals process is probably not as sophisticated as ours. It may just be a matter of days before they execute him
convicted. I bet you he does. I bet you he is a potential suicide candidate. So what do you know about this bus bombing in Baghdad, Riley?
Well, 30 people have been killed. Apparently, this was a situation where the attacker waited till the bus was pulling away from a bus station in Baghdad and then just detonated the bus. bomb. He actually jumped on board as the bus was pulling away to avoid security checks. According to a police lieutenant, as the bus was going outside, a man carrying a bag tried to get into the bus. The conductor was suspicious, tried to stop him, but the man insisted, sat in the middle of the bus, and blew himself up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Also, today's sad day. This is the 25th anniversary of John Lennon passing. You know, we've been getting some emails that are very touching. Some guy wrote, I think one working class hero is almost as important as an inspirational you revolutionary kind of way as Imagine is. Yeah, a working class hero is something to be. Damn, I'm 25 and writing this is bringing me tears to my eyes. Wow, John Lennon is truly legendary. It's interesting. I had the same experience where you don't know where it comes from, but once you just lock in and connect with a Lennon song or your relationship with John Lennon. Got another couple emails. Maybe we'll read them in a little bit. I asked for some calls about being strapped with the economy being where it is right now over Christmas and how people are changing their Christmas plans. It was interesting. I was looking at some of these Iraq numbers that we got from the Nation in terms of just how much money Army and Marine Corps soldiers make in Iraq. Like a private first class 3-year service makes about $25,598 a year. First lieutenant, 2 years in the service, $33,031. A sergeant major with more than 22 years of service, $64,166. And a colonel with more than 22 years of service, $100,520. It's interesting that certainly with the private and the first lieutenant, this is not a lot of money by any stretch of the imagination. We have a call from Leslie in Washington State. How are you, Leslie? What's going on for you this Christmas?
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
We're doing okay. You know, it's sort of a sad day, but we're making okay with it.
It's very sad. Real quick, pertaining to that gentleman with the bipolar.
Yeah.
I just moved from Florida.
Yeah.
And I have dealt intimately with bipolar in my family in Florida. And unfortunately, they have what's called the Baker Act in Florida.
Yeah.
Where if they're not medicated, and if anybody perceives them to be a threat to themselves for whatever reason, they can have them taken into custody and taken to a hospital and evaluated and possibly put into a psychiatric unit.
Wow. That's called the Baker Act, huh?
Yes.
And I'm going to look into that.
And they can only hold them for 72 hours.
But that's an interesting thing I didn't know about. So
yes.
You were talking to her. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And what it's designed for is to allow a psychiatrist to evaluate this person and to evaluate them to deem if they're a threat to themselves or others.
Right. Well, that's interesting. If that comes up in this case, we'll be sure to look about that. You were telling our screener, Leslie, about your Christmas holidays coming up?
Yes. And it's a sorry state stating, you know, it really torques my Twinkies that President Bush has the audacity to come out and say, all the economy is doing great, everybody's doing wonderful, when the working class is, and I'm ready to say the working poor, okay, because a lot of us are out of work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a disabled veteran, and I'm on a stipend, and my husband has been out of work since May 20th. He's for an L&I, labor and industry, work-related injury.
Yeah.
So I've had no money for his part coming in since May 20th.
Wow.
Okay, so half my income has been cut in half.
Wow, and I'm sure there's a lot of other people that know exactly what you're talking about. You know, I got so many cookies here, Leslie.
And, well, it's fine. We have a big family on his side, and every one of them are getting sugar cookies and fudge.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've never lost sight. My husband and the Christian fundamentalists, right-wingers, whatever, like to say they are born-again Christians and they have the hold on it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a Christian, but you know what? I'm not fanatical about it. And I believe that the Christmas holidays are to to be celebrated in whatever way you decide to be celebrated.
There you go.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
In whatever faith or whatever way.
Yes.
If you're an atheist.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Hang the tree. Have at it.
I put an atheist wreath on my door.
You know, it doesn't matter to me as long
okay.
as you enjoy.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Leslie. We'll try. You try to have a Merry Christmas. You got a good spirit. Thank you for calling us.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. So, look, I guess we'll do Cliff Notes a little later in the show. In a second, I'm going to talk about a new soft drink that really I could just reading about this was making me go, I got to have that. When is that coming out? 17 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the f*** up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It is 21 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. That is John Lennon. Today is the 25th anniversary of the murder of John Lennon. Very sad. And we are taking some. We'll be talking about it a little later. You know, one thing I'm excited about is, and just to switch gears, is Coca-Cola's got this new product out.
You know, Maron.
What,
Brandon? I hate to interrupt you about
okay.
this, but you got a call right here that you probably should take. It's Future Mark, who's on line one.
All right, Future Mark, I love that guy. Put him through. Hey, buddy,
hey,
what's
buddy,
up?
Hey, what's up?
So, Future Mark, what's going on in 2050?
Hang on a second. You call that a lake of fire? I want flames up to people's necks. More heat.
What was that?
Nothing. My new job, that's
all. Your new job? What kind of job is that? What are you, God?
Not exactly. Excuse me. One more. Please. I'm sorry. Why is the vat of excrement not bubbling? It's almost time for the diving competition. Here's the thing. Remember the rapture?
The rapture, sure. You mean when God was going to come down and take all the holy rollers?
Yeah. Well, that happened.
What?
Yes. Revelations turned out to be nonfiction, man.
Wow.
There was fire and brimstone and the four horsemen and seven seals and flaming swords and harlots and beasts with seven heads and upon each head were seven horns. You know, the whole thing.
Really?
I got news for you, buddy. Brimstone hurts.
Wow.
How?
So the evangelicals were right?
Yeah, man. That one stung. Turns out God came down and all the true believers got lifted right up to heaven, left plenty of big empty houses in Utah, my friend.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. So what happened to those, you know, left behind?
You mean me? Well, good news and bad news. And I'm sorry, excuse me. I need rivers of blood. Thank you. I'm not in heaven, but good news, God put me in charge.
In charge of what?
Tormenting the damned. I don't hear wailing. I don't hear a gnashing of teeth.
Wait, wait, wait. So you're Satan, right?
Well, I don't have a job title per se, but there's definitely job security.
So who are you tormenting?
Everyone who wasn't chosen. You know, everyone from Air America, except for that quiet girl in accounting.
Oh, right. Yeah, I knew she'd make it.
Rich, poor, black, white, men, women, I torment all of them. I even torment you.
Me?
Of course. I'm tormenting you right now. Just listen.
No! No, stop it! Stop it! Turn it off! Ah!
What's the matter? Music not loud enough? Crank it.
Please, anything but this. Can I have dinner with my parents again?
Wow, man. The implications of this are mind-boggling. You mean I'm going to spend eternity tormenting myself?
That shouldn't be too much of a stretch, am I right?
Well, you got me there. You got any advice for me in the future?
Well, you could repent, but we both know that's not going to happen, right?
Uh-huh.
Gotta go. No rest for the wicked. You people in room 3, coffee break's over. Everybody back on your heads.
Okay, man. See ya.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, boy. I knew that I wouldn't end up well. The world's number one soft drink company needs more sugar and caffeine addicts to get on board, apparently. Next Wednesday, Coke will launch Coke Black. B-L-A-K, it's spelled. That is basically classic Coke infused with coffee extracts. I'm hungry for it, man. I tell you, I've got a secret. I drink Diet Coke. I used to love regular Coke until I realized it was killing me and making me fat and causing me diabetes. I swear to God, I'm petrified of diabetes now with all the chocolate I'm eating. But I don't drink that regular Coke anymore. But I saw this advertisement, Riley, and everything just went off in my head. I'm like, Coke Black. I was picturing the can, dude. I was like, I bet you that's going to be a cool can.
B-L-A-K?
Yeah.
I mean, what does that mean?
Dude,
obviously, they don't want to insult African Americans, so they won't call it Coke Black, B-L-A-C-K.
Right.
But like, what does Coke Black stand for?
I'll tell you what it stands for: Coke and coffee, man. Coke.
They
and
already got caffeine in the soda. What do they need coffee for?
But now it's gonna have that little taste of coffee, and it's gonna be with Coke in it. Didn't you ever have? They have coffee soda in New Jersey, isn't that a New Jersey phenomenon?
No, but that's a Brooklyn phenomenon.
That coffee soda.
Manhattan special.
Yeah, I've had that.
That's made in Brooklyn.
Right, and my grandma used to get some sort of diet coffee soda. I think Diet Right Soda back in the 70s made a coffee soda and a chocolate soda, and it used to come in bottles, and she used to get it. And I'm just saying that if this Coke can is black and it just says Coke Black on it and it's got Coke and coffee in it, man,
is this going to be for the young edgy crowd? Is that what this is?
Well, I don't know. I guess they're going after the Red Bull crowd, but all I'm thinking is Coca-Cola and coffee in one can with fizz in it. And like, apparently it's supposed to be introduced in France tomorrow or a week from today. It's not going to be here till 2006. And I hate to say, I guess I'm brainwashed by Coke, but I'm excited about it.
You're excited about it? Were you excited about new Coke?
Yes! Wait a minute. Wait. That's a mistake, Riley. I was mad. I was frightened that they were going to change the recipe. I was the guy, I literally stockpiled classic Coke. I stockpiled the old Coke when new Coke was coming out because I was so frightened that the new Coke would taste wrong, and I had cases of regular Coke.
Yeah, but you know what? It did taste wrong.
It did.
Wrong that they had to get rid of it.
Right, and then when classic Coke came out, I was like,
back to reality.
There's something wrong with me. Look, when we come back, we're going to talk about something lighter. We're going to have Anna Jane Grossman. She's a co-author of It's Not Me, It's You, the Ultimate Breakup Book. Now, I'm not planning on breaking up with anybody.
Me neither.
You know, the holiday season's are a time of that. You know, some people choose that time because it saves them some dough. You know what I mean? 27 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. And now, another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Oh. Thurl Ravenscroft, voice of Tony the Tiger. Thurl Ravenscroft, whose booming voice... I'm sorry.
A little choked up?
Yeah. Thurl Ravenscroft, whose booming voice of Tony the Tiger helped condemn two generations of American children to a life of high fructose corn syrup and tragic obesity, is now buried in a grave! After leaving the Air Force in 1947, Thurl went to Hollywood to form a vocal quartet called the Mellomen, which performed with Danny Kaye, who Laurence Olivier said was gay!
Oh, no.
A religious man, Ravenscroft, began narrating annual presentations at the Crystal Cathedral in Southern California. Was known for ending a show with the phrase, "Kellogg's Frosted Flakes, they are great!" But not as great as the Lord Jesus Christ, who died on the cross for your sins, dirty heathens.
You all right, man?
Yeah.
Maybe I ought to blow your nose.
Oh, God, you have a tissue?
Yeah, here you go.
Thank you.
Oh, man. It's that time of year, I guess.
Oh, it's, yeah. Hey, it's getting to be summer. Those who worked with Thurl Ravenscroft often called him unpretentious, while those who lived next door to him often called him loud. Men called the police whenever he was having sex. Ravenscroft requested his body be enjoyed every morning with skim milk and sliced bananas.
Oh, no.
Anyway,
yeah.
This has been Mort Mortensen saying, who's chopping onions?
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
All right, 36 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Before we talk to our guest, Anna Jane Grossman, about breaking up, let's do these. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Native people of the Arctic have filed a human rights complaint against the United States, saying carbon pollution from America causes global warming that is destroying their habitat. When Bush was told that the greenhouse gases were raising temperatures in the region, he said, quote, "You think they would be happy we're warming things up for them? Don't they live in those little ice houses and rub noses to keep warm, or is that Santa's elves?" End quote. Ironically, this could be the first time anyone ever filed a lawsuit because they didn't slip on ice. Hello.
Oh.
Didn't slip on ice. You know, Anna, you'd enjoy these more if you put the headphones on and got on board with the people in the booth. Sorry, I didn't mean to bring you into it, but here you are. Insurgents in Iraq. Can you hear? Good. Insurgents in Iraq have launched a web-based publicity blitz, increasing web postings from 145 in January to 825 in November. The web postings are growing more sophisticated and frequently include video, professional editing, and even a dream book where bloggers can post your favorite recipes before blowing themselves up. Nothing? All right. It's radio. No pressure, Anna, to laugh. You just hang out and we'll talk to you in a second. Although the insurgents' websites are becoming increasingly sophisticated, counterterrorism officials are frustrated that they rarely include buttons marked About Us or Contact. Come on, that's pretty funny. The insurgents have even created their own emoticons showing a little yellow dot with a face inside an exploding car. That's awful. I feel bad about that one. Several megachurches are planning to be closed for Christmas, even though it falls on a Sunday this year. Many evangelicals are outraged. Of course, any megachurch members who were unhappy with the closure of their megachurch on Christmas are free to spend the holiday going to an actual church. An actual church. That, you know what? I try to be funny. You know, I tried to make the joke.
Why did you think it was funny?
It was pretty funny.
Very funny.
There's a woman here, and I wanted her to laugh, and she didn't. But I'm not going to pressure her.
She's laughing on the inside. All right. I can totally tell.
You know, it's so rare that we get women, you know, in this world.
Yeah, she
thing
said she liked
I'm
the show before she got
already.
Here.
No, you're not being picked on. We're happy. We're trying to impress you. It may encourage you to know that 99.9% of all relationships are doomed, such as the cheery outlook of our next guest. She's the granddaughter of the oldest man ever to get divorced. Is that true?
That's very true.
And the co-author of It's Not Me, It's You, The Ultimate Breakup Book. Anna Jane Grossman joins us live in the studio this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So your grandfather, how old?
Great grandfather. He was 97.
And he got divorced.
He got divorced. He was a shoemaker from Poland.
How long was he married?
He was married a decade or two. It wasn't my great grandma.
Oh, okay.
But,
so it was his second marriage.
You know, they'd had enough.
All right. Wow. So now you're a proponent of divorce or of breaking up, and that is why. I mean, is it because you think that why stay in something? Like, a lot of people, there's two schools of thought. Like, you signed up, stick in it. Or, like, I've been divorced once. I am remarried, and I'm completely happy that I did that. I hope
your wife is listening.
No, she's
I'm not a fan of divorce.
Right.
And I certainly don't wish divorce on anyone. But
right.
I do believe that most relationships break up, not just marriages. But when you consider all the relationships that we go through from the point, you know, we're in middle school,
yeah,
high school.
That's true. That's true.
To the point where we're 97 and we're
yeah.
filing for it. You know, most relationships end.
And you just have to realize that, and you have to know how to do it properly.
You should know how to do it properly. In a way, you know, it can make the relationship a little sweeter if you accept that chances are it's not going to last.
Well, I got to be honest with you. I don't know about you, Riley, but when I've broken up in my life, I've got to be at the end of my rope to actually be the one with the courage to say I'm done. Usually, I try to disappoint the person as much as possible.
Yeah. I
followed that same.
Did you?
Yeah. Be disappointing. It makes things easy.
Yeah.
I think so many of us go that route.
They do.
You know, like, this sucks, and this relationship sucks, but it's just too much effort to try and end it.
What's the right way to do it?
Well, there is no right way or wrong way, but it's a good idea to accept that it's going to happen. And so we might as well get good at doing it. In the book, we outline all sorts of different methods from celebrity methods, like, the Jude Law.
Yeah, it's called the Jude Law.
Jude Law.
What is that?
Well, that one was also...
Is that where you just show up with another woman?
The Hugh Grant. It's sort of...
The nanny one.
Yeah, sleeping with somebody, or Hugh Grant, who I think slept with a stripper. Sleeping with somebody, a little bit below your social status, you know, whether it be a nanny or a stripper.
But you understand why that happens, I think. I think of why that happens.
Because men like nannies and strippers.
Exactly.
Well, but they
especially
also...
Especially if your nanny is your stripper.
Well, and also if you've been with somebody long enough to where you don't think that they think you're godly enough or the perfect being, you're going to find somebody that does.
Someone beneath you, or
just sort of like, oh my God. You know, I'm not talking from experience or anything.
I got a question.
Yes.
What do you do and now mind you, this has nothing to do with me in my current life, right?
Of course not.
No. We're both talking about past lives.
Past lives.
Yes. Okay.
But I mean, what do you do? Because a lot of guys get involved in stuff. Extramarital, extra relationship.
Women do too.
Yeah. They don't get caught. But if they do, they're prepared for the relationship. Then how do you deal with a relationship if you just got caught with something?
Oh.
Doing something, not with something.
Well, and you want to stay in the relationship or you don't want to?
You're ambivalent about whether you do or you don't.
Well, I mean.
You just got caught, though.
That's a tough question.
Firstly, I should preface this by saying, we wrote this book. I co-wrote it with this screenwriter in L.A., Flint Wainis. We don't pretend to be experts on the subject.
Right.
We're saying this happens and deal with it.
Right.
And I think one interesting thing in the book is that we have different points of view on a lot of things because I'm a woman and he's a man.
Sure.
And in that situation, I think what I would say is you're probably not that into it to begin with.
Sure.
If you're messing around with someone else, might as well just end it early than continue the suffering.
Yeah, I mean, some people think that they can get away with that kind of stuff, but let's just go
sometimes,
over...
sometimes you can.
Yeah, but can you really?
Yeah, you can. You can, and you know you can.
But I think that eventually, in my case, my conscience got the best of me. I decided that I wasn't in love. I wanted to honor myself, and I wanted to let her go her own way. So I think it becomes, if you are a big enough person and you're willing to not live that lie, you should just say, look, we can't do this anymore. You don't have to admit to everything, but, I mean, you don't want to live with that eating at you.
I think, things end, and I think people have a problem. I think it's fine if a relationship ends.
So you got any do's and don'ts? We're talking to Anna Jane Grossman, the co-author of It's Not Me, It's You, The Ultimate Breakup Book. How about some tips? You got any quick tips that people can use in breaking up?
Quick tips that people can use in breaking up. Well, I believe in telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I think you might as well get it all out there. The relationship is ending anyway, so if you're going to hurt the person's feelings,
all the way. Do it well.
Yeah. But you have to tell all the truth. Just the truth that needs to be told for you to go.
Exactly.
Right.
I also believe, you're allowed to obsess a little bit afterwards, after the breakup. You're allowed to. After somebody dies, nobody says to you, get over it.
Come on, get up.
Get back on the horse.
Well, none of your friends tell you that.
So if you need to sit at the computer for hours at a time and Google your ex check his Friendster profile more times than you'd like to admit, go ahead. Do it.
Yeah. What's the Lost in Translation chart in the book here?
That's all about the different things men and women say that during a breakup and what they really mean. I don't have it in front of me.
Okay. I understand. But see, now, there is a risk here, okay, because there are websites, not that I've ever seen any of them myself, but I've read this in the paper, there are websites that are dedicated to guys who've been dumped by women showing nasty videos of those women.
Interesting that you bring that up. The book started because we started a website, Flint and I, called BreakupNews.com, which was all about breakup announcements written in the same style as wedding announcements. And one of the things we got a lot of on the site was people posting pictures of their exes, often embarrassing photos and embarrassing information with the person's full name. And thanks to Google, once it's up there,
everybody can see it.
Google, Mark Maron, and up comes the breakup announcement.
Oh, boy. So listen to this. Here's some of the Lost in Translation chart. The line, it's not you, it's me. She means you're way more into this than I am. He means I'm looking for a 9, you're a 7.
Ooh.
The line, I love you, but I'm just not in love with you. She means you bore me, although I guess you do if there were no other options out there. He means... when we're having sex, I pretend you're someone else. Wow.
I like the one that's
what?
About... I'm not ready for this right now. Is that
okay?
Right?
Yeah. Wait. I'm just not attracted to you anymore. I'm too young to settle down.
Yeah, that's when I'm too young.
Oh, I'm too young to settle down. She means I'm only 12. He means I'm only 40. Well, yeah. Well, that's the thing. This book is it's not. It's a funny book. There's a lot of jokes in it, and it may provide some relief and some insight into this. Now, how is your dating life? Given that you're writing this book, how's it going with you?
Well, it's going slowly.
Really?
I recently dated somebody who told me I was too much of a cynic to actually enter into a relationship, which I don't necessarily believe. I think I'm just a realist. I think I believe that, you know.
I think you have a cold heart and you're all locked up.
I'm a cold heart. It's in my blood.
Somebody has to come and just, you know, blow you off your feet. Hasn't that happened?
Well, you know, I started off in sort of the wedding wedding side of this. I was a wedding announcement writer.
You were a wedding announcement writer?
For many years.
So that's what broke you. That's what made you jaded and dark.
So I think I've seen the love from both sides.
Have you been in love?
I have been in love. Yep.
And what happened?
I've been in love several times.
What happened the first time?
The first time, I was in love, the guy told me that he wasn't ready.
Uh-huh. And then what about the second time?
Oh, God, do we have to go through this?
Hey, you were painful.
We're going to take a commercial break and come back.
What about the second time?
What about the first time you were in love?
The first time I was in love, I could not tell the difference between love and complete obsession. And I got so possessive and so crazy that I think literally she had to go to Europe.
Mm-hmm. All the way to Europe.
She had to go to Europe to literally.
I sent one to Australia.
You sent one to Australia?
But that was probably.
So
the thing about obsessing, and we go into this book, is it's endless, and it can go on and on. And in breakup, you can be obsessing about. Can take you much longer than a relationship actually lasted to get over the person.
I'll tell you something. Sometimes if you don't love your job or what's going on in your life, obsession's a fine way to spend time.
It's the best.
All right,
cheaper than drinking.
Obsession and drinking. Yeah. The book releases in January. It's not you in February or January.
January, but it's a good Valentine's Day gift. It's not me, it's you.
It's not me, it's you. The ultimate breakup book. Anna Jane Grossman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Good luck with the book. 48 past the hour. We'll be back. We'll talk about Lennon. We'll talk to Russ Feingold. We got Johnny K coming in. So stay with us. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Fifty-two past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Welcome aboard. Sad day. This is a day of the anniversary of John Lennon's death. We're going to talk to you guys a little bit more about that. Get into that. We got Russ Feingold coming up soon to respond to George Bush's speech. That's Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin. But right now, there are a lot of big stories in the news this week. So let's get some bets down with our own Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny Cashery, is here. Johnny, where's the action, man?
Follows me, baby.
All right.
First of all, let me say, I just flew in from Miami, and man, are my arms tired from waving them over my head and yelling, "Don't shoot me!" Remember the good old days of air travel when all you had to worry about were screaming kids and crummy food? Now you got some glorified mall security guards shooting retarded passengers. You know what you have to become an air marshal? Unemployed. This idiot has been eyeing every Cat Stevens lookalike since he got his job, waiting for someone to make a sudden move. And what does he end up doing? He shoots a bipolar 44-year-old American citizen whose wife is screaming, "He didn't take his medication!" Yeah, he really fit the Al-Qaeda profile, didn't he? Doesn't flying suck enough already? The other airline should jump on this story. Fly with us and we promise we won't shoot you. I've got to go to Vegas tomorrow. I'm giving 5 to 8. I make it a lot.
Hey, Johnny, I'll take that for a C note.
Put me down for $5 billion.
It was a joke. All right, let's get down to business.
All right.
The big story this week has been the Saddam Hussein trial, but to be honest, I don't think the country is paying too much attention to it. I'm taking no action on this at all.
What?
The Hussein trial is too boring for most of America. They know he's a bad guy, but most people in America aren't even sure what he's done. He doesn't have a slick lawyer like Johnny Cochran. He didn't stab his wife to death like OJ, or shoot her in the head like Robert Blake, or pick up a waitress and shoot her by mistake in his living room like Phil Spector. So no one is really interested. If a blonde isn't getting whacked somewhere, America doesn't care. If Hussein had a three-way with Britney Spears and Jennifer Aniston and then fed him to his lions and videotaped the whole thing, we might pay attention.
Yeah.
Hussein actually said he didn't have time for the trial. He was too busy, and he didn't show up. Oh, excuse us. Wait, we don't want to cut into the time you spend picking fleas out of your beer, you know? Don't have time. How do you get away with that? I got a business to run. I'm in court every week. Give me a break. But my line on Saddam is even money's going to get the death penalty, and even he would take that action.
I'll take that action for $500.
Yeah, I'll take that for $500, too, and I'll bet you $1,000 there is a tape somewhere of Saddam, Britney Spears, and Jennifer Aniston having a three-way. I bet.
From your mouth to God's ears. You're covered.
Right. Johnny, what do you think about Bush's speech about rebuilding Iraq's economy?
I think it's only fair. He destroyed it. He should rebuild it. Or should I say Halliburton should rebuild it. Some of these people still don't have electricity, food, water, homes. Oh, wait a minute. That's New Orleans. Yeah, I'll bet the people in New Orleans were thrilled about Bush's speech. These people don't have two crawdads to rub together, and Bush is worried about rebuilding Iraq. He should have thought of that before those bombing raids. Bush even mentioned he wanted to build a soccer stadium. Is this guy out of his freaking mind? Give these people a soccer ball, they'll eat it.
Oh, no.
Why not go all the way? You want to build Iraq's economy? Here's my suggestion. Legalize gambling. First of all, it's surrounded by deserts, just like Vegas. You wouldn't even have to change the names of the casinos, the Sands, the Desert Inn, the Mirage. It's a slam dunk.
Oh, wow. Johnny, Condoleezza Rice has been in the news. She's in the middle of a European tour. What kind of Condi action do you have?
I'll tell you what. We'll make a bet straight up right now. If Condoleezza Rice says one thing on a trip that's actually true, I'll hand you $10,000 across the board. No questions asked. Rice is the biggest puppet of the entire Bush administration. She should be attached to strings or sitting on Bush's lap. She can't even talk if Bush is drinking a glass of water. Miss Piggy hasn't been as manipulated as Condoleezza Rice.
Johnny, Howard Dean said in a speech the other day that the United States couldn't win in Iraq. He compared it to Vietnam. What are the odds on him retracting what he said?
500-1. Not going to happen.
Give me 100 on that.
I'll take it for 200.
Dean compared Iraq to Vietnam. If Bush had the same attitude about Iraq as he did about Vietnam, we wouldn't have gone in the first place. You have to laugh when Bush talks about not giving up the fight. If he didn't have his father to help him get into the National Guard, he would have shown up for his physical wearing a ball gown and high heels.
Hey, Johnny, you're going to have to lighten up, man. You're all full of the steam today. Thanks for coming by, though, man.
Oh,
yeah,
my pleasure.
We got to go. Are you heading to court?
I'm headed to court right now.
All right, buddy. Johnny K Street, thanks for stopping in.
Yeah.
When we come back, we'll talk to Senator Russ Feingold, see what his odds are on this whole situation. 57 passed.
Morning Sedition
on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour. Good morning. It's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
We're going to be talking to Senator Russ Feingold in a few minutes. But before we do, let's just get a couple of news stories out there. Today is the 25th anniversary of the murder of John Lennon. It is a sad day. I've been getting a lot of emails reflecting on that. We're going to engage with you a little while longer, maybe take a couple of calls on that. It's a very sad day, a profound impact on my life. Air Marshals in Miami shot and killed a passenger claiming to have a bomb in his back. Backpack and then running from the plane. The man's wife said he was bipolar. He was off his medicine. But I don't know. It's not clear whether they acted inappropriately or appropriately. They were basically following the protocol to be followed by air marshals who follow the same protocol as a lot of law enforcement agencies. My phone just rang in my pocket. That is the first time that's ever happened on this show. Moving on a little bit, we're going to talk to Russ Feingold about Bush's speech, but Saddam's trial, he left the courtroom shouting on Monday and refused to reappear yesterday. The judge went on without him. The court has been adjourned until after the elections on December 21st. So right now, yesterday President Bush described, he rejected calls for a timetable for U.S. troops withdrawal from Iraq. He described as, quote, pessimists, those who think that the U.S. can't win the war. Our next guest has been a vocal critic of the war from the very beginning and was quick to offer a response to the president's speech. Senator Russ Feingold. Feingold joins us on the phone this morning. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Senator.
Thanks for being with us. Did the president give you any reason yesterday to think that we are on the right track in Iraq?
Well, the problem here is that he is so focused on Iraq as if it is the be-all and end-all of our national security that he doesn't really understand the challenge before this country. The fight here is against those who attacked us on 9/11. And the president keeps talking about the Iraq situation as if it's the only issue out there. There are some 60 countries where al-Qaeda is operating, according to our administration.
Mm-hmm.
And he is so focused on Iraq as if it is the be-all and end-all of our national security that he almost can't see straight. Sure, there are positive things happening in Iraq, and I'm very pleased about that. But unless we have some kind of a vision of completing the mission there, not only will we not succeed in our further goals in Iraq, we will also continue to weaken our country and our ability to fight al-Qaeda. We will continue to weaken our army, which even the army leaders say is in desperate shape. He's not looking at the big picture. He's only looking at one square on a chessboard, and he needs to look at the whole question.
And Senator Feingold, I mean, it's clear it's pretty apparent to me and to say that what is going on in Iraq is not, you know, essentially Al Qaeda. I mean, there was a bomb blast today that killed 30 people and wounded almost 40 people, and it seems to me that what he's doing there with this ignorance or with this narrow mindedness that you're talking about is exacerbating terrorism worldwide. He's created a manufacturing headquarters for terrorism.
Well, that's what the head of the CIA said in February. He said this is the leading training ground because of, you know, basically the way we went in there. And the president contradicts himself. On the one hand, he sort of describes the different elements of the insurgency, some of them from within Iraq, some from without. And he acknowledges that it's not all foreign terrorists, but then he goes and talks about this as relating to the broader fight against terrorism. What caused Iraq to become part of this was his mistake of going to Iraq and not focusing on bin Laden and the various parts of the world where al-Qaeda was operating. So, yes, it's true we have to deal with the situation at hand. But his idea that victory in Iraq is the issue is incorrect. Victory over al-Qaeda is the issue, and he keeps confusing it, and it's not really a military mission anymore. It's really a political and economic mission, which he was talking about yesterday, and that's what we should be focusing on as we find a way to complete the military mission, which has really, in my view, basically run its course.
Senator Feingold, recent polling seems to indicate that most Americans either want an immediate pullout of U.S. troops from Iraq or want some kind of timetable. How close do you think this administration is to actually coming forward with some sort of timetable here?
Well, you know, they're probably talking about it very seriously behind the scenes. In fact, there are times when some of the top generals basically get out there and say that, and then they're put back in the woodshed, basically. I mean, the reality is the White House made a mistake by going into Iraq, and they also made a mistake by saying we shouldn't have a timetable, and now they're sort of trapped into that mindset. You know, they ought to admit that that's a mistake, that a public timetable is a good idea. It helps our country be more supportive of what we're doing there. It helps the Iraqi people take ownership of the process. And it makes it much harder for the terrorists to recruit people from around the world to make jihad against the so-called American occupation. So that is the key to this situation.
But now, Senator, doesn't at some point the president get a free pass because Democrats can't agree on whether or not there ought to be a timetable?
No, not at all. The president of the United States is responsible for this mission. The president of the United States is the guy in the first place who should have had a plan to finish this properly. It is his job to be the commander-in-chief. You know, it's regrettable that we've even had to talk about this. I did not, you know, immediately come out and ask for a timetable. It was only when the president provided no leadership at all and they kept hiding in their bunker on this that I started to talk about it. It's not the duty of the minority party in the United States Congress to say, here's the plan. It's the responsibility of the president of the United States, who's the commander-in-chief, to say, look, here's what we're trying to do, here's the time by which we believe we can do it, and here's when the troops we hope can come home. He has failed on this. It's just silly to say that you know, 200 or 300 Democrats should all agree and that that's our responsibility. I think most Democrats really do basically think we ought to figure out a way to finish this mission and bring home the troops, but the exact specifics, sure, there's going to be disagreement, but it's the president who was elected to provide leadership on this.
So now let me ask you this about one of your senators there. I don't know if he's a friend of yours. What do you make of Democratic Senator Joe Lieberman for his arguments for staying in Iraq?
Well, he is a very good friend of mine, and I think Joe is one of the finest persons in the United States Senate, but I completely disagree with him on this. Joe agreed with the idea that we should go into Iraq, apparently as part of the greater war on terrorism. I never bought into that. He apparently bought into the idea of the urgency of dealing with weapons of mass destruction. I didn't. And now he continues down the line with the White House with this idea that we shouldn't have a timetable and that we're actually, everything's going just fine there militarily. Well, I was over there. And of course, every time our military fights, we win, but that's not the issue. The issue is whether or not we're encouraging the insurgency or not. And that's where I'm awfully sure I'm right. And I don't know if Senator Lieberman is listening to General Abizaid and General Casey, our top generals in that area and in that region. They say that our presence there is feeding the insurgency. So to me, the only logical conclusion is, unless you want to encourage a horrible insurgency and foreign terrorists, that you do not talk in terms of trying to stay there as long as it takes, as they say, because that is a vision that will only encourage the very opposition that we do not want to encourage. So I'm a friend of Joe's, but I am completely in disagreement with him, as are almost all the Democrats. The story should be here that 40 senators, including one Republican, 39 Democrats, voted for what was basically a timetable in the Senate, and one Democrat disagreeing does not change that.
Now, Senator, there's a report today that Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld may leave early next year, and there's some speculation that the Bush administration may, in fact, pick Senator Lieberman to take his place. Would he make a good defense secretary?
Well, I think he'd probably do a fine job for this administration. I'll tell you this, I disagree with Lieberman tremendously on this issue and on many other issues, but he is a man who keeps his word and I think would be much more straightforward with regard to talking about this issue than Rumsfeld has been. Rumsfeld and Cheney have been frightful in their willingness to deny the reality in Iraq. I disagree with Lieberman's assessment of what's going on there, but I think he has a much greater likelihood to be a person who would tell the truth.
At the beginning of this conversation, we only got a minute here or so left, Senator Feingold. I want to know, when you say that the solution is now from this point forward, since the military solution is not working out any longer, economic and political, the mission against terrorism, how do we start that process?
Well, I didn't say it wasn't working out militarily. What I said was that the military aspect of what we've done in Iraq has pretty much run its course.
Right.
In other words, we beat them whenever we face them. It's not a military mission so much anymore.
Right.
What we need to do now is help the Iraqi people bring together their economy and their political situation. We should definitely stay committed to that even after the troops are leaving and after they're gone. But overall, this country has to recommit itself to the broader fight against terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
It's an organization that's in 60 countries.
Right.
We know that it's in Afghanistan and in former Soviet republics and in Britain and Spain. And that's the kind of effort that we had underway after 9/11. And somehow the president decided that Iraq, that didn't even have al-Qaeda there, was somehow the be-all and end-all of our national security. We need to protect the American people.
Right.
As important as Iraq is, protecting the American people is the most important thing.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us, Senator Russ Feingold.
Really thank you, Senator.
Okay, take care. So we'll be back in just a moment. We're going to talk a little bit more about John Lennon's death. We're going to talk a little bit more about what Russ Feingold just said. And Bruce Cherry's got his pitch of the week. It's 16 past the hour.
Hi, this is Phil Lesh from the Grateful Dead. One time, I was listening to Morning Sedition and Marin started riffing on the Bush administration. Then Riley came in with a slamming groove about the right wing's use of the media. Just when you thought it couldn't get any freakier, Marin broke into Scarlet Begonias. What a sick jam. Best show ever. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Like to live to ripe old age with Yoko only, and I'm not afraid of dying. I don't know how I'd feel at the moment, but I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
That was John Lennon. It's 21 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Today is the 25th anniversary of the murder of John Lennon. He was murdered outside of his New York City apartment building, the Dakota. Shot three times in the chest, and as he turned to move away, another two times in the back.
There, you know, it's very sad to me, as I've said throughout the day. I just listen to certain music. I just have a very deep connection to John Lennon. I can't even explain it. I didn't grow up with when the Beatles were still even together, but I certainly sort of took to him. We're going to talk a little bit more about him. We'll play you how Howard Cosell telling the world for the first time that that John Lennon had been killed in just a minute. But sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank this up and feed it some headlines. All right, here we go. From the Associated Press, Bush to focus on economic progress in Iraq. Bush to focus on economic progress in Iraq. Translation, Iraq, just wait till we start exporting terror. How about this one? Bush gives up on economic progress in America.
That's true.
Yeah. That's one of those ones. Yeah. That's not funny. That's true, man.
Yeah.
That's true. From Indianapolis Star, scientists stop serving junk food to kids. Scientists stop serving junk food to kids. Translation, put the ding-dong down and step away from the child. From Forbes, marital squabbles can harm your health. Marital squabbles can harm your health. Translation, well, I hope you're happy. That's good. All right. So this is a very sad sad day because it is the anniversary of John Lennon's death. He did write some great songs with the Beatles, but on his own, to me, is where he really resonated. The first time I heard the song Mother or Jealous Guy or Crippled Inside or Imagine. I mean, Imagine is way down on my list of favorite John Lennon songs, but this was a guy who all he wanted was to be authentic. He wanted to be human. He wanted to be true to himself, and he wanted to erase some of the hypocrisies that that people, you know, are consumed by. And you got to love a guy for that.
Well, you do have to love a guy for that. And John Lennon was never a person who was trapped by his own celebrity. Mm-hmm. He refused to be, at a certain point, trapped by his own celebrity. And I think that so many people, particularly now, are victims of, you know, whatever it is, whether it's Britney Spears or whoever. John Lennon kind of stands out. Yeah. And there are very few guys. I mean, if you look at American music across the length and breadth of the 20th century, you're talking about a very small number of guys. Maybe Woody Guthrie and a Charlie Parker and a couple, and John Lennon.
Exactly.
He's in that very small, very select group of people whose music made an impact way beyond just the people who went out and bought his records.
Well, this is how the entire world first heard of John Lennon's death. It is Howard Cosell. It's during a Monday night football game on December 8th, 1980. Cosell made the announcement against his producer's wishes.
Yes, we have to say it. Remember, this is just a football game. No matter who wins or loses, an unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous, perhaps, of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
There you go. That was Howard Cosell. That was November or December 8th, 1980. I was in high school. And this is one of the first times that you know, a hero of mine's death, you know, really had the impact. I just got a letter from a friend of the show, Terry. Two things. I'm a year and change younger than Maren, and this was the first time in my life that the death of anyone, public or private, affected me so directly. I had all their vinyl, even though I was so young, and I happened to be watching the game when it was announced, and I just sat there in shock. As others can remember Pearl Harbor Day or the day JFK was shot, I think this day was the same type of life-changing, seminal moment in our lives, and it will never be forgotten. And I think a lot of people feel that way, some of the other emails I'm getting. And just the way I engaged with it yesterday, just reading that today was the day, I got choked up and I listened to some of John Lennon's music. It was the honesty. It was really the honesty that, to me, was so profound.
Yeah, it was profound. And, you know, in a way, it's sad because it's been 25 years, and that means it's been an entire generation.
Yeah.
Of people who are now coming up who have, I guess, even a more diffused notion of who John Lennon was, because, you know, they didn't necessarily become impacted by his music as directly as maybe you did or I did. But now, you know, you have so many people that have covered his stuff over the years.
Madonna, a lot of people.
Madonna, Dolly Parton, Brian Ferry, you name it.
Brian Ferry's version of Jealous Guy is very good.
I have it on my iPod.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's that song just kills me because I, you know, was a jealous guy and am no longer a jealous guy. You got to grow over that because it's just the energy it takes to be jealous is just malignant. And you know, you'd be surprised, Riley. We got an email from a guy 25 years old who got choked up just writing the email working class hero. And it's one of those things that I just can't even explain because musically it wasn't he was so ornate it was very simple. I think it was really just the honesty and the courage of what he chose to talk about and how much he chose to reveal of himself.
Well, you know what? The other thing, though, is that his melodies, I always thought, were very special because they never went in predictable lines.
Exactly. That's true. That's true. So we'll go out with this song, Mother, a very honest and longing song. And Bruce Cherry will come back and make us laugh. Right, Bruce? 27 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You didn't want me. So
you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
It's 3 days before the Academy Awards. Around this time each year, every lazy media outlet relies on some self-appointed expert to talk about all the nominees. Well, Morning Sedition is about to do the same thing. So we're using the one guy who's seen more movies than any of us. Here now is the phone conversation about the Oscars I had with Morning Sedition's resident movie reviewer, my father, in a segment we like to call Dr. Maron's Movies.
Hello.
Hey, Dad, what are you doing? You sleeping?
Yeah, I was hanging out in bed.
Come on. Come on. It's time to get up. You want to talk about movies?
We've only seen a couple.
But what about the Oscars? Have you seen all the Oscar movies?
We saw Million Dollar Baby and I saw Sideways for the second time.
Yeah, did you like it the second time?
Yeah.
What'd you think of that? You think that deserves like the best writing?
That's a hard call, you know. I don't know what their criteria are, what they're looking for. You never do, but, you know, it's a politics, it's a whatever, but that Giacinto, I guess is his name.
Paul Giamatti?
Paul Giamatti, yeah.
Yeah.
He sort of helped the picture. He was a great sort of constant straight man in the picture. It was good. Hotel Rwanda and The Woodsman were also good.
Oh, you saw Hotel Rwanda?
Yeah, it was excellent.
You think Cheadle deserves the best actor?
Well, I think he comes close, you know. I mean, I think he's American. He portrayed the Rwandan national perfect as far as accent goes, and that's a heavy picture. You got to see that picture.
I've been wanting to see it. I haven't gone to see it yet. I know it looks pretty heavy. I read about the Rwandan genocide, and it was just reading about it was devastating.
Yeah, but it's just this really gets you right in there, almost like Schindler's List, only with more action. It's a real shoot 'em up happening in Rwanda. You know.
All right, Dad. I love you. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks for calling. I love you. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, yeah, so let's sum it up here. The deal on some of this year's Oscar nominees. Sideways is good. Paul Giacinto sort of held the picture together. Don Cheadle comes close to winning Best Actor because he's American and he portrays a Rwandan national really well. And Hotel Rwanda has more action than Schindler's List. It's a real shoot 'em up.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
All right, it's 36 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
One of our writers, Bruce Cherry, has been trying to get a regular character on this show. His presentations have apparently delighted staff and listeners alike. Everyone, it seems, but me. Well, please welcome Bruce Cherry for Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week.
Thank you so much, Mark. Today?
Yeah, what do you got?
Today we're going to do a play.
Okay.
The scene is the studio. Right. I've just finished Pitch of the Week, and I've gone off to whip out some sparkling Cliff Note jokes.
Okay.
Mark Riley is talking to his venal and prickly co-host, Mark Maron. Let's go to script.
All right, we're going to script now. Okay.
Well, that was yet another incredible Pitch of the Week from Bruce. The listeners love them. When are you going to give them a break, Mark?
Bah, humbug. If I had my way, every idiot who goes about with Bruce Cherry on his lip should be boiled in his own Bruce and buried with a stake of cherry through his heart. What the hell does that mean? What kind of writing is this? This is the reason you're not on the show, Bruce.
Stick to script, okay, Riley?
Please, Mark. It's just, well, I don't know what Bruce will do if he doesn't get a character on the show.
And there are no prisons. Are those no workhouses? Humbug, I say. Now, if you don't mind, Riley, I'm going to slip into a fantasy sequence.
Mark Maron.
Hey, wait. Hey, it's Dave, Little Goliath, our half-paid intern, who, for some inscrutable reason, Bruce writes into his sketches occasionally as a bumbling half-wit.
Ow! I think I just electrocuted myself. Mark Maron. Ooh.
Hey, wait, Dave. Why are you dragging those heavy chains?
I wear the chains I forged in life. Ooh.
Dave, you're still alive.
Okay, I was trying to put snow chains on my tires and got tangled up. But Mark Maron, you will be visited by the spirits of Bruce Cherry's rejected pitches. Ooh.
That's ridiculous. For all I know, you're just an undigested piece of the vegetarian swill I eat.
Well, tell me this, Mark. What kind of piece am I?
Oh, my God, it's Johnny Gaystreet, the effeminate gangster Bruce created, whose popularity eclipsed even that of his Ferrucci-derived mentor, Johnny Gaystreet. This can't be happening.
Arr, it be happening. Believe it. I know I do.
Zounds! It's Bernard, the credulous pirate, a swashbuckler who believed anything, and who Riley convinced that I had stowed a king's ransom in my butt.
Arr, there be treasure. Let me plunder it. But first, gaze upon this, ye scurvy dog. This be Pitch of the Week past.
Why, it's me as a little child.
I'm Mark Maron, and I'm going to make life difficult for somebody when I grow up, and all because I'm so unhappy now.
Wow, I didn't come to that realization until after years of analysis.
Did somebody say anal? Because I think I have a pull for that. Hello.
Oh my God, it's Salacious. Salacious, the priapic pollster whose constant double entendres are often non sequiturs.
Yeah, I got something you can sequitur on right here.
Precisely my point.
Stop, Mark!
Quirky throat! The high-level mole Bruce placed in the White House based on a retarded kid from a network TV show.
Who tarted? You tarted, Mark! Shut up! And gaze upon this, the ghost of Pitch of the Week present.
Why, it's Bruce Cherry, working late into the night in his tiny apartment in the Bronx. Hey, I thought you had a place in Manhattan.
This piece relies on pathos, okay? Back to script.
I had no idea Bruce worked so hard on these pieces. It's 3 a.m. and he's doing research on a website called Horny Asian Teens.
Yeah, the Horny Asian Teen character didn't work out. Now, just a dang minute.
Osama bin Mallard, the awkwardly named terrorist duck?
Awkwardly named? There's nothing wrong with my sobriquet.
Robriquet?
No, that's me, actually.
Oh.
Robriquet?
Oh, it's Thysoline, the extinct marsupial whose manner of speech was stolen from Scooby-Doo.
Ruby Roo? Roo-Ray, rucking rooser.
Please, spirits, I had no idea you formed such a rich tapestry. I can't take anymore.
Well, Mr. Maron, there's one more thing you're going to have to take. Blah, 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 blah.
Oh, no, it's Trevor, the ever-evolving bonobo, a species of ape that settles disagreements with sex. That bit was absurd.
Well, obviously, I disagree. Blah, 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 blah.
Wow. I need a cigarette. Please, spirits, this has to stop.
Oh, do allow me to differ. Blah, 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 blah. And gaze upon this, Mr. Maron, the ghost of Pitch of the Week future.
Why, it's a huge Broadway theater with eager throngs entering. The marquee says, Bruce Cherry's cavalcade of characters. Nobody will be seated during the ape rape sequence. Presented by Mark Riley. Oh, no. Please, let me wake up. Wake up. Please. Please.
Mark, wake up and help me get untangled from these chains.
What? What, little Goliath? Not the snow chains again. Hey, the show is still going. The spirits did all their work in one overly long sketch. Bruce, you're still here. Listen, I have a change of heart. Let me just say, totally on my own, that your bits have been brilliant.
You mean I can do a regular character?
I promise you, you can do your characters for as long as I have a show.
God bless us, everyone. And scene.
Oh, my God.
Wasn't that lovely? I like worked in, like, only about two-thirds of the characters that have been created.
What's going on with you?
The flatulent fish.
Yeah, everybody was there. What is going on with you writers? Is everyone, you know, are you all snapping? You coming unhinged? You were out there in Jim Earl land.
We have been given freedom, and it's probably not proper to accuse anyone of being in Jim Earl land, because that carries connotations far, far beyond the quality of the piece.
Well, you know, Bruce, as I think I'm going to stick by what your script said, and I say that you can do any of those characters for as long as this show's around. You're welcome to do whatever character you want.
Yes, I'm a regular.
You're a regular, and that'll start next week.
Excellent.
Yeah, and or maybe we should have one final pitch of the week. You did a fine job because
I felt a little weak.
Well, the problem was I was originally scripted for Chris Lopresto, right. And who could have known that Chris would be out sick today? Yeah. And we don't know what Trent's really capable of. We know he's a great board up, but we don't know.
Not much. I sense a little resentment here.
We have no insecurity. Do you think he could have carried that role? I mean, let's be honest.
I think so.
Oh, you do?
Oh, come on, Trent.
Oh, man. So you're going to have out with Little Dave then.
No problem.
Little Dave?
See you behind the tennis courts after 9:15.
Little Big Dave. All right. So let's move into the final stretch here, shall we? We've got Cliff Notes coming up. We've got the Coke Black jokes that I didn't do earlier. Coke Black, if you didn't know, is something they're releasing. It's classic Coke with coffee in it. And then maybe I'll read this email from some guy that's just pissed off and will never be happy about anything. 43 Past the Hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Democrat, Republican, or independent, you should want a fair election.
That's right.
Why is it that you don't want people to come in and monitor ours?
Congresswoman Brown, can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
Are you in the tub?
I'm not going to tell you.
Congresswoman, let me ask you this. By the way,
I didn't know this was an X-rated show.
Oh, Lord.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
All right, it's 49 past the hour. I guess we'll land this thing for today. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yep.
This is Morning Sedition. We have about 6 more shows to go. A week from tomorrow will be the last Morning Sedition show. It's going to be a good week. We're going to send off the show with somewhat of a festival for the week. We'll be playing a lot of best ofs. We'll be talking to some of our favorite guests, and we'll move through it. And then a week after that, I'm not sure when. I know that your show premieres on the 2nd. Is that true, Riley?
I don't know.
We're not sure yet, but Mark Riley will be here from 5 to 7. Rachel Maddow will be taking up the 7 to 9 spot. That's some good morning programming from Air America Radio. Hopefully, if we work it out, I'll be broadcasting from Los Angeles in the evening sometime. I don't know what that means for you listeners here in New York, but I've been told that perhaps there would be a weekend show here in New York with me, Mark Maron, on it. Let's move into a little of the news. You know what? It's so weird to me that I get I'm burning up right here because of this guy's email that, you know, we get. It's just interesting when Democrats or liberals, it's never enough for some guys. You know, this guy writes in, nice friendly chat you had with not so Feingold. Unlike his good buddy Joe Lieberman, Russ Feingold didn't buy Bush's reasons for invading Iraq, but he expresses no outrage at Bush's lies that have already cost us over 2,000 dead and more importantly, well over 100,000 Iraqis. Well, I'm not sure what the numbers are, but I think that Russ Feingold did express outrage. I think as a senator, as an elected official, to be one of the few guys that has stood up against this war from the beginning, that's the type of outrage that senators are able to express and to manipulate and to use to move forward in the political process to try and facilitate some change on that level. If Russ Feingold got out there and talked like this guy and the rest of this email, that was just, you know, snotty, sort of condescending, you know, ultra like, you know, like, hey man, don't you see it? Yeah, he sees it, but he's trying to operate within the government structure.
that's afforded to him and take the courage to stand up against this president in the way he's going to do it. He can't do it like that.
Well, look, Russ Feingold took plenty of heat for being one of the steadfast people in the Senate against the war. And I wonder if this guy can tell us exactly who it was in the Congress who voted against authorizing Bush to go to war.
Mm-hmm.
Since he's, you know, so knowledgeable, who was the one person that voted no in the U.S. House of Representatives? I know who it is. You know who it is.
Finally, yeah, go ahead.
Barbara Lee.
And who was the only one that voted against the Patriot Act in the Senate? Russ Feingold.
Russ Feingold.
You see, I mean, it's just this kind of attitude that I don't have much patience for, because at some point, I mean, you can only expect certain actions out of certain publicly elected officials to start facilitating a change in that area. And this guy, to be the only guy that voted against the Patriot Act, to be one of the few that voted against the war, that's a profound
Is this guy from Wisconsin?
It doesn't say.
I'm curious, because if he's not, then the question is, what is his elected official doing?
Well, he's just he was pissed off that we spent so much time talking about John Lennon, because that might be important to people. This guy's just a buzzkill that thinks that screaming and yelling is going to facilitate change, and screaming and yelling over an email. But it is a sad day for a lot of people that did love John Lennon. This is the 25th anniversary of his death. That does mean something to people. It does mean something to progressive people as well, because John Lennon was a symbol of hope, a symbol of progress, of a liberal way of thinking. And when a symbol gets killed or gunned down, certainly long before he was supposed to, no one should ever have to die like that. It does have a profound effect on the country, on the world, on people who had a great deal of love for this man.
Well, you know, we're not the only people who are talking about John Lennon today. Yeah, I mean, it's not like we're unique in the broadcast world, marking the fact that the man's been dead for 25 years.
Well, look, here's John Lennon's words about being dead.
I'd like to live to ripe old age with Yoko only. And I'm not afraid of dying. I don't know how I feel at the moment, but I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
That's fairly profound. I try not to think about death, because given my particular spiritual status, to me it's just a long black time, just an empty void where, you know, I know that I was here going, and then that's it. There's just quiet on the other side of that. Look, the world's number one soft drink company needs more sugar and caffeine addicts to get on board. So next Wednesday, Coke will launch Coke Black. That's Coke BLAK. That is classic Coke infused with coffee extracts. I'm excited. I wish it was coming today. I want to taste it. I want to see the can. I'm hoping, as Riley suggested on a break, that it's not. He said he thinks it can be one of the small cans, right?
Yeah, one of those little skinny things like they do with the energy drink.
I hope not. I want it to be a big black can of Coke with some cool label, and I want it to taste. I'm excited about a soft drink. There's part of me that's very connected to Coca-Cola. I'm ashamed of it, but you know, I wrote a whole one-person show about it. But I'm looking forward to it. Apparently, there's some other products that are doing the same thing, roughly, combining things that it would seem excessive. Like we have Krispy Kreme's Bear Claw with sausage gravy that's supposed to come out next week. Of course, the Count Chocula with Ritalin, which I think it could be a good idea. Then we have Denny's Bacon Fried Chicken Fried Bacon. And I don't know if anyone heard about Snapple's new iced tea and nicotine, or Snappletine, which is I'm looking forward to, because maybe I can get off these damn cigars that I seem to have picked up. We have Sweetened Pixie Sticks. That's flavored sugar that now has added plain sugar, so it's good for for the kids. How about Tyson's Stuffed Pork Chops, which in this case was stuffed with other pork chops.
Pork on pork in pork.
Well, that's like that stuff they passionate for Thanksgiving. What was it called?
Turducken.
Turducken? What a disgusting thing that is. It's a chicken inside a duck inside a turkey. We got X-Wax infused with ecstasy. It's X-Waxtasy. wait, one more, dude. Burger King Breakfast Burger features two all-beef patties, cheese, and glazed donuts in place of the bun. Now, you know what's weird? There's part of me that's like, that would be so bad.
It's kind of like a McGriddle.
Exactly. That's just what I was going to say. It sounds like a McGriddle.
All right, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Native people of the Arctic have filed a human rights complaint against the United States, saying carbon pollution from America causes global warming that is destroying their habitat. When Bush was told that the greenhouse gases were raising temperatures in the region, he said, quote, "You think they would be happy we were warming things up for them. Don't they live in those little ice houses and rub noses to keep warm, or is that Santa's elves?" End quote. Ironically, this could be the first time anyone ever filed a lawsuit because they didn't trip on the ice.
Insurgents in Iraq have launched a web-based publicity blitz, increasing web postings from 145 in January to 825 in November. Among all the propaganda videos played on the site is the video Cherry Pie by Warrant. An Al-Qaeda spokesman explained, saying, "I admit it, I love big hair bands from the 80s. Does that make me a bad person?" Some of the insurgent sites are less reputable than others. You can usually spot the sites that were set up for free. Their cries of death to America run under banner ads for Levitra. Is that how you pronounce it?
Levitra, yeah.
I see it. I never know if it's Levitra or Levitra. Several megachurches are planning to be closed for Christmas, even though it falls on a Sunday this year. Many evangelicals are outraged. Of course, any megachurch members who are unhappy with the closure of their megachurch on Christmas are free to spend the holiday going to an actual church. Phrase of the day, just drop it into conversation. Earnest evangelicals are upset over megachurches closing for Christmas, to which one can reply, "Wake up, sheeple. Of course they're closed. They're businesses, not churches."
Word up.
Word up, man. So tomorrow, this is going to be interesting. We're going to talk to that woman, Lisa DiPaolo, who we talked to before, who wrote a piece in, what was it, GQ a while back, about the two military
guys that were watching over Saddam Hussein.
The American guys.
Yeah.
We've got Lawton Smalls. We're going to have, hopefully I'll have a dream about Butch tonight and everything will work out. I got to go let the movers into my house, Riley.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know. I hope everything turns out okay, man.
Yeah, me too.
And make sure they don't try and up the estimate, okay?
I didn't try.
Hey, you got to keep your eye on things. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.